Hello, you're listening to the World Pooja Network. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and welcome to another edition of the Inspired Parenting Show. Several months ago, I had the great pleasure of talking with Dr. Charlotte Resnick about the power of children's imaginations and how imagination can be harnessed to help our children with all sorts of challenges and issues they face in their daily lives. At that time, Dr. Resnick had just completed a new book. Now that book is out and is receiving great acclaim, and I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Resnick back so that we can continue our fascinating conversation. As a recap, for those of you who may not have listened to that earlier show, which incidentally is available in the World Pooja Archives free, here's some background information on Dr. Resnick. Dr. Charlotte Resnick has pioneered therapeutic interventions with a wide spectrum of children. She's perhaps best known for creating imagery for kids, breakthrough for learning, creativity, and empowerment, which has been presented to lots of professionals, psychologists, educators, and parents at local, national, and international levels. She's been featured on national television, published in professional and general journals and newspapers, and is a sought-after consultant, counselor, and healer. And her latest book is The Power of Your Child's Imagination, How to Transform Stress and Anxiety into Joy and Success. Dr. Charlotte Resnick, welcome back to the Inspired Parenting Show.
I'm very happy to be speaking with you again, Sandy.
It's our pleasure. Tell us, what was your goal in writing this book?
You know, I really wanted all the children to have the skills to help themselves. They have the most precious gift inside themselves. They have their imagination. And I really felt with a little guidance and a little help from their parents or a teacher or their therapist, they could access that wisdom that's inside to help themselves. Because, gosh, when you think about it, we want our kids to do well. We want them to be happy. We want them to be peaceful inside. And they need a little help. But they could learn to help themselves. You know, the old, if you teach someone to fish, they'll have food for a lifetime. And that's the idea with this book, is to have kids be able to feed their soul, to feed their hearts, to feed their minds for a lifetime.
I know that as a child, I literally lived in my imagination. I was always hiding away in trees and under tables and just writing stories and reading folk tales from different countries. And I lived there all the time, and it was a wonderful support for me. But, you know, there's a lot of parents who seem to think that it's a bad thing. They see if a child says something, they take it as lying. How do you counter that?
I try to encourage, that happens a lot. You know, parents do say that to me as well because they want their kids to be honest. And I try to explain to them, especially when they're younger children, there's a fine line between reality, their imagination, their fantasy life. And I would suggest the parents kind of make that bridge with the child and then help them, you know, encourage them to have a great fantasy life, but also have them understand what the difference is. Is that one of your wonderful stories, or is that really happening? And as they get a little bit older, 5 or 6, they'll be able to say, oh, that's one of my wonderful stories. So instead of saying, don't tell that silly story, it's not true, you could make something beautiful of it and say, oh, I love that story. Do you have any more? Or what's really happening? You know, you can make that bridge.
What does current research tell us about, you know, the power of imagination?
There is an amazing amount of research that shows how powerful it is, and most of it is in the area of using guided imagery, visualization, mental rehearsal. First, it started with adults in cancer treatment, in sports, and now it's with kids the last 10 or 15, 20 years. And a lot of the people that I know in regular university research have found that using the power of their mind, they can reduce. Oh, just last week there was a study coming out, a nice little pilot study that showed using imagery, using guided visualization, kids reduce their chronic stomach pain 3 times as much as kids that didn't use guided imagery. they were listening. Because it was a study, they were listening to an actual CD. And that was a big difference. It's used in asthma. It's used in pain. It's used all over the place. Every sports team has a sports psychologist, the Olympics. Everyone talks about using the power of their imagination. And Michael Phelps, who won that impossible 8 gold medals at our last Summer Olympics, said, when everyone said it couldn't be done, all it took was a little imagination.
Mm. I know many, many years ago, when I was living in England, I remember watching a TV program, a documentary program, and it was talking then about, it was kind of like the early days when they were using creative imagery with cancer patients, and somebody had done some research and they'd found that there was actually, they could measure a chemical that was being released as they were doing a visualization, and that chemical was boosting the immune system.
Right, right. That's true, because we have a storehouse of chemicals in our brain. The serotonin was probably being released. That makes you feel good. And if you feel good, then that strengthens your immune system. When we're stressed, we know through research that our immune system gets depleted and depressed, and so it's easier to catch a virus or an illness. So it's very important to start early, I believe, because I work with kids, to start early and teach them the skills to learn to relax deeply. And they could do that through their breathing, through the power of their mind, through the power of their imagination.
Yeah, I remember, too, reading a report in a health magazine some years ago about athletes who'd been injured, and they were doing some tests where they had them sit in the same room as their, you know, their colleagues and who were exercising, and they said, we know you can't exercise, but we want you to close your eyes and imagine that you are doing these exercises.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there was actually a 20% increase in muscle tone.
Yes, that makes total sense, because I remember another study, and it was with basketball, and what they did was they had three groups, and they had the kids shooting baskets from the foul line, and the first group practiced every day for 20 minutes shooting from the foul line. The second group didn't practice at all, did nothing, and the third group just visualized shooting from the foul line and imagining the ball making that arc and that loop and going into the basket. And after 3 weeks, what happened is, maybe what you'd expect, maybe not, the group that didn't practice at all didn't improve at all. But the group that practiced and the group that visualized, they improved statistically about the same percent, 23 and 24%.
Hmm. Does this mean that instead of going for a jog every morning, I can lie in bed and just go through it in my mind?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but... I think whatever we call it, whether we call it imagination, whether we call it mental rehearsal, whether we call it visual imagery or visualization, they're all related. Whether we call it self-hypnosis, they're all in the same spectrum. The idea is you could use that power in your mind to transform your life in a very positive way.
You know, I was fascinated by some of the research in your book. You know, non-medical ways to treat children's headaches. I didn't know that 90% of all school-age children experience headaches.
At some time, I know. It's unbelievable. I go into classrooms and I ask, how many of you ever get headaches or stomach aches? Everybody raises their hand. Kids are really stressed. And maybe about 10% if kids get migraines, and those are those severe pains that could last for a day or two or three on one side of the head. So if we could help the kids just manage their stress in this actually free, easy, fun way, it'll make a difference for them.
Could you, if this is so prevalent, then obviously a lot of our listeners are going to be nodding their heads right now and say, yes, I know, my child, my grandchild, my nephew, niece, whatever, does suffer from headaches. What would you advise them to do?
Well, when I look at a headache or, a symptom like that that's caused by stress, I look at it holistically, almost like spokes of a wheel. And when one thing is off, maybe you don't get the headache, but maybe if three things are off, something happens. For example, just basic physical things you could take care of, which are eating properly, eating, you know, at regular intervals, drinking enough water. Sometimes kids get dehydrated and get a headache from that. But when we look at the stress in a kid's life, we want to manage that. So many of the kids that I see, they do so much. They have school all day, then they have homework, then they have after-school activities or sports, and they hardly have time to just chill. So I'm not saying any of that will go away, but we want to teach them the skills to manage it. So if they could just do their deep breathing, the balloon breath that I call, you know, it's kind of like a meditation breath, breathing 2 to 3 inches below their belly button very slowly so that when they breathe in, their belly goes out. And when they breathe out, the belly flattens. And if they do that, starting very simply, 3 breaths, not a big deal. Start 3 breaths with your eyes open, then 3 breaths with your eyes closed. Anyone could do that. Then I usually move on to how many or how few breaths can you take in a minute? And then everyone could find a minute. And then I try to have the kids maybe take that minute before when they get home, before they start their homework, or when they get to school, before they're having a test, before they go to sleep. And slowly, slowly, gradually, we increase it so that within a few months, they're breathing, meditating for 5 minutes a couple of times a day. And then they could even increase it more over time. But when you do that, it just centers you. It balances your blood pressure. It just changes your physiology. And it has even a bigger component of really helping you to connect to your wisdom within. Now, that's one aspect of headaches that could be taken care of easily with the breathing. And although the breathing is important for all aspects of life, I want to go back to the headache. If a child is having a headache, I have this simple little, it's almost like a trick. You have them do their balloon breath and you ask 3 questions. What color is your headache? What shape is it? How heavy is it? And then you just say yes or fine or good. And you have your child keep breathing, eyes closed, if possible. And you ask again. You kind of go in rounds. And what you'll notice usually is that the headache often starts out as black or red and very heavy and sharp. And then over a little time, maybe 3 to 5 minutes, it changes. It transforms to round and blue and yellow and maybe even white. And it gets much lighter. And then if there's any little bits at the end, because often kids will say, oh, it's gone. But if there are any little bits, you could have kind of a talk with the headache. I call it like a dialogue. Have your child ask the headache, hey, you know, headache, what more do I need to know or to be aware of or to do to let go of these bits of pain? And see what pops up in your child's head and pay attention to that. I'll even take my palm and put it about 6 inches from where the headache is outside the child's head and just have her imagine or him imagine sending the rest of the headache out through my palm, to my palm and out, and it'll disappear harmlessly. And the idea is it helps them direct that energy out and away from themselves.
And you could use this for a stomach ache. You could use it for an anxiety. You could use it for really anything.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do kids say when you perform this magic on them?
Well, one, they're very happy. They're relieved. And then often they'll teach their friends. I was doing a teen group with a pediatrician colleague of mine years ago, and one of the girls had a headache, so we did this process. The headache went away, and she went to school, and she started teaching her other friends who got headaches how to do this. So they get very excited, and then they can continue and teach other people.
That's great. I'm going to teach this to my grandson. How young can you teach this?
You know, surprisingly, I've been actually work with kids as young as 3.5. I would say normally 5, but it depends on the language of the child. If they're at 3, they might understand a rainbow or a balloon. You could show them concretely. And some younger kids like the idea of a rainbow, so I call it the rainbow breath. You know, I kind of adapt the language mm-hmm. to different ages, and they really like that. And just doing that and filling they imagine breathing in the rainbow, and they imagine filling their whole body up with love. And that just relaxes them. And when you're relaxed, your stress goes. And when your stress goes, the pain goes.
I guess these tools can work for parents too.
Absolutely. That's part of my mission, is while I'm teaching the parents how to help their kids, they're learning these tools. And it's very important for me to support the parents, because it's such a tough job to be a parent, and it's often a thankless job. And you have to get appreciation and support wherever you could find it. That's why one of the imageries I have that chapter on for parents, mm-hmm. and it's an imagery for parent support so that they can receive the appreciation that they deserve.
Yes, that is really, really important, because you're right, it is a thankless task. Nobody says thank you until years later, if then.
Right. So everyone's individual. You have to remember, and we all know this, that some people don't actually see an image. They might feel it. They might hear it. They might just sense it. One boy told me he didn't really see things, but he just got a feeling about it. And so you want to respect however your child processes information. But you could always work with it. Whatever way it is, you could be creative and work with it yourself. Like one boy was having terrible headaches, and he thought there was like a guy drilling in his brain. And he imagined a SWAT team coming down to drop in Tylenol into his brain. And so we work with his SWAT team and see if they could, you know, help drop in some, you know, without using the Tylenol, could they still have his headache go away? And he was able to do that.
There was about a month ago, several weeks ago, I was talking to my grandson on the telephone. He was mm-hmm. feeling very sorry for himself. Mm-hmm. He had been off school sick with a high temperature. His behavior had gone through the roof. His mother was at her wit's end. And I said, put him on the phone. And he told me he had a headache. And I was talking to him to see if I could find out what might help it for him. You know, would he like something cool on it? Would he?
Right.
And he said in a very pathetic little voice, no, nothing's going to help it. What would you say to a child in that situation?
Well, I think you're bringing up a really important point of this work. Sometimes when you ask a child directly, would this help, would that help, they'll say no or I don't know. And so what I do is I bring in these animal friends and wizards, the idea that you have imaginary helpers. And when they bring in an animal friend or a wizard, and then you ask them, oh, what does your animal say will help your headache? It sort of bypasses their defenses. It kind of cuts right through. And in a way, it's tricking the conscious mind, because then their animal friend will say, oh, you need to rest, you know, or here's some magic salve that you could rub on your temple or something like that. It's amazing. It really shifts things when you don't ask them directly.
I never thought of that at the time, but you're absolutely right. It intrigues them, it distracts them, and you've given them a whole other thing to think about.
Right. And you're still accessing their wisdom in the form of a special animal friend. For example, different animal friends come up depending on the situation. If a child is scared, like One boy was afraid of this. He was going to go to the doctor and have a medical procedure, and he was afraid. So he imagined these pride of lions protecting him. Whereas another girl who was scared of something, she had a rabbit, like a scared rabbit, because that rabbit understood how she felt. Mm-hmm. You never know what animals are going to come in. It might be, you know, the opposite of the feeling that the child is having, or it might be the same feeling, so that the animal really appreciates what the child is going through.
So when it comes to imaginary friends, we really should be encouraging our children and perhaps even developing one or two for ourselves.
Yes. I had a grandma tell me when I was speaking. She said, I'm going to go get a wizard. I'm going home right now. And this can be used for any problem, pretty much any problem that comes up. I had one girl that was terrified of sleeping at night. She was afraid that her house would be broken into, even though they actually had an alarm on and they had dogs. So what she created, she went into this imaginary world, and she imagined a giant white, not like a dragon, a giant dragon, Valcor, that swept around her bed and protected her at night. And she felt safe. She actually put a tiger at the door just in case, but she really felt safe. And when she started to worry about her family, her brother, and her parents, she just sent Valcor's cousins to protect them. And interesting, her mom really wanted to know, well, does she know the difference, what's real and what's not real? And she did know the difference, because fears come generally from an imaginary place. I mean, there are real fears, real reasons to be afraid, but in this case, there really wasn't. So if her fears came from an imaginary places, if that's where they develop, that's the perfect place to find a helper to overcome them or to protect her. So, and she would talk about going into her mythical world, the difference between her mythical world and the real world. So she was quite aware of it, and I'm sure kids are too.
Good. Well, only yesterday I found myself being in a meditation and ended up in a land full of dragons and brought one back with me. And I woke up this morning and there was the dragon. You know, it was as if it was right there beside me. It was in my consciousness, and it made me smile.
Yes, absolutely. When you think about it, what we imagine, our brain does interpret as quite real, because think about the simple thing of cutting a lemon in quarters and biting down your mouth puckers, or watching a scary movie and then having nightmares because you think they're real. What you've watched, you believe, your brain believes is real. So we might as well take advantage of that and use it for our own good rather than our detriment.
Yeah. Lift our mood. I mean, I'm really happy with this little dragon following me around.
Oh, did you have a conversation? And
getting to know one another, and it's a very small dragon, and it's almost like a puppy in a sense, but just, you know, I can see the colors and everything, and he's beautiful. And wow. Every time I'm aware, you know, it's in my consciousness, I get a big grin on my face.
Wonderful.
Yeah. What about some of the more serious situations that children go through, like divorce, custody battles, you know, losing a parent? How could we use these tools for a child in a situation like those?
They're really important, because at times like that, kids just really fall apart a lot. And I've seen it, you know, way too much. They have the power inside to help themselves. And, for example, one girl whose parents were going through a bad divorce actually listened to one of my CDs every night for 4 years just to comfort herself, just to feel that she can go to a special place. Sometimes you need a respite from real life. And so I think it's fine to take that and create a place that you do feel safe. Or one child that was going through cancer treatment, and that's a loss. That's a real potential loss for himself. He had a snake. He imagined the snake living in his legs that came up and ate all the bad guys, and the bad guys are the cancer cells. And another child who lost her parent was, I kind of go with what they believe in, what happens to a person after they die, and she believed that there was a heaven, and people and animals went to heaven. And so she imagined her dad up in heaven and had a conversation with him. And sometimes you could finish some old business, like imagine what would you like to say to the loved one who's died? What would you imagine them saying back to you? And often you could say things that you weren't able to say in real life. And she also imagined his hands coming through heaven and sending her love and sending her hearts. So that kept her connected to her dad who had died, and that gave her a lot of comfort.
Oh, that's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used that technique myself with the hands coming through the clouds and just, you know, reshaping something that I might be visualizing. And I've had some incredible results with that. I even got upgraded on a plane once.
Oh!
Just because, you know, I had these hands changing it for me.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And a death that a lot of kids experience sometime in their life is the death of a pet. And that can be very, very sad. There's a lot of grief associated with the pet, because a dog or a cat you've had all your life, And I talk about one child who lost her dog, and just I think I talked about it in terms of a boy because, you know, my book, I have to change everything. But as I speak to you, I kind of remember the real child. And she went to visit her dog in dog heaven. She imagined she can go visit, that only people that lost animals could go, and she would go visit dog heaven, and she imagined and drew what dog heaven looked like, and it was a very cool place where no cats were allowed, and there was a special shower that scratched the dogs, and they could eat anything they wanted, and so she was really imagining her dog in a better place, and that made her feel, again, very comforted.
Mm. What would you do for children who have trouble sleeping? I mean, you know, sleep is a major issue for kids today, isn't it? There's so many kids who have challenges getting to sleep or staying asleep.
Oh, my, all the time. I can't tell you, Sandy, how many pediatricians send their patients to me because they have trouble sleeping.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's either they have trouble falling asleep or they have trouble staying asleep and they keep waking up. So you could definitely use many of the 9 tools to help your child sleep. And, of course, the first one is doing the breathing, the balloon breath. Sometimes I have them imagine how they'd like to fall asleep, you know, simple images. But sometimes they actually bring in helpers. Like one girl had a beautiful unicorn that gave her sleeping medicine that in a perfume jar, like this beautiful white powder that she would sprinkle on her head and kind of say to herself, falling asleep. Falling asleep, and she'd fall asleep. Or another child said that if you believe you're asleep, you'll be asleep in a minute. You know? And so you call in different helpers, either a sleep wizard or animal friend that could give you gifts to help you sleep, like the sleep powder, or tell you special things, and read you a story at night. You know, if your mom or dad, or you're too old to be read stories, you could still have an imaginary friend come and help you read the stories. And the whole idea is to really relax your body and allow yourself to let go. Now, some kids are afraid of falling asleep. I'm thinking about a girl who, whenever she closed her eyes, a scary creature, like this lumpy green alien creature, would appear before her eyes. And I knew her quite well, and I said to her, oh, what part of that does that represent? What part of you does that creature represent? And she said it was her anger. And she was angry because she had so much to do. She had schoolwork, she had tutoring, she had dance, she had art. It was too much. She wanted free time. So I had her talk to the lumpy creature, even though we knew it was a part of herself, even though she acknowledged it was part of herself, it was her anger. But we talked to it like it was outside her. And that made it easier for her to get information. So we asked the lumpy creature, well, what would help him calm down? And he said, well, he wanted 2 hours of free time a day. Well, that was kind of hard to do, so we negotiated him down to 1 hour free time a day. And he was satisfied with that. And then he was able to leave her alone, and she was able to fall asleep peacefully. So you want to deal with the issues that the kids have, because sometimes their minds go racing at night before they go to sleep. But this is kind of a fun way, and it's not blaming the child, like they're doing something wrong. It's just being on their team and helping them find the skills to do it through their own imagination.
Yeah. What about a child who is very angry and acting out because of it? How can, you know, the caregiver or whoever help them using your tools?
That's another big issue. Anger is another one. Anger, aggression, acting out. We all get angry, of course. And kids do too, and it's great if we could teach them ways to handle that anger. So, okay, so we want to teach them just prophylactically, practice the balloon breath. That'll help kind of lower the ups and downs so much. But I'm thinking about a girl who had, I had her picture where her anger was in her body. You know, I have the kids close their eyes, and we get in touch with different feelings. Good feelings first, maybe, and then some not-so-good feelings. Because I want them to start having a language, a different kind of language for their feelings, and then we can work with them through talking to the feelings or even using color. So this one girl had, her anger was in her left knee, and it was a red bull. And what she said was, it came out went to protect her from the red bull and other people. Well, I can understand that, because when you get defensive, the anger comes out, or if someone hurts you. So what could help? So she imagined a white filter in her neck that when the anger, when the Red Bull was coming out, it would make her words not so mean, which was lovely. And then one of her guides, I'm not sure if it was her wizard at the time, gave her another gift, and that was a love potion in her heart. And what happened is when they sprinkled the love potion on her angry Red Bull, it turned into this calm, blue, sleepy, lovely little creature. And so she then relegated the filter to stay in her toe and, you know, and use the love potion instead because it was much more powerful.
How do you elicit this information from the children? What sort of questions do you ask them?
Isn't that interesting? Like, well, I just have them relax. I'll take them to a special place or have them imagine a special place so that they have a place to do this work. And then I just ask open-ended questions and just go with what they come up with because everyone is so unique. I never really get two answers at once. So I might, you know, just say, where do you feel? You know, just look inside, you know, look through your body or scan your body, and where is your anger hanging out? And what color is it? And again, like what shape is it? Or does it have a face or an image or what image comes to mind? And so just go with that. And sometimes they're very, very, simple like a black blob, or sometimes they're more specific like this Red Bull. And you just go with wherever your child is at. Like one boy felt anger, you know, in his gut. It was black. And then so we were looking for the anecdote, you know. So I said, okay, where do you keep your calmness? And he had blue calmness in his shoulders. And then so I had him breathe in that calm blue feeling to the anger and notice what happened. And he noticed that it kind of covered up the anger, kind of coated it. So then I thought, well, let's try love. Where do you keep your love, your feelings of love? And that was in his heart, and that was white. I often find for boys, they might have white or red, and girls might have pink for love. So he breathed in the white love into the where his anger was. And this time, it kind of dissipated. It made all the anger disappear. So he found out for him, love was more powerful than calm feelings. And it's very simple. You see, we're just using shapes and colors, and voila, it just
I love that. I mean, because, you know, someone else might, you know, if trying to do something like this might say, well, do you have any love? And then you're going to get a yes or no answer. But to actually say, where do you keep it, it's presupposing that they've got it.
Right.
For a start, and
right.
It just sends them on a journey within to access it.
Right. Right, exactly. And so sometimes it might come up like, I don't feel any love. You know, I don't, you know, they even respond that way. So I go, okay, see if you could find like a little pinprick of one, just a tiny, tiny speck. And usually if they're, you know, in that bad shape where they're not feeling very good about themselves, they can find a speck of love. So then I work with that, and parents could do that. You just, okay, you got the speck. What color is it? Okay, say it's gold. So then I have them breathe and try to expand that speck of gold love and see how with their breath and their intention, they can make it grow larger. And then we could expand it and it could fill up their heart. It could fill up their whole body. You know, we just see how far it takes them. Like one girl, she felt love for her younger, you know, brother in her heart. But she also felt hate, and that was in her foot. And so I tried to see if she could, with her breath and her intention, send her love to where the hate part was, which turned out to be sadness, which turned out to be jealousy, which makes total sense because she wasn't getting enough attention because she was the older sister. And what happened, she was able to imagine sending her love to her ankle, but it wouldn't go to the foot where the sadness and the hate was. There was a gate that blocked it. And when that happens, I'm actually excited because I know it's an opportunity for them to learn something. So then we spoke to her sad feelings and her angry, you know, her hate feelings, and asked it what it needed to open the gate to allow love in. And they told her that she needed more time with her mom. And how could she get more time? Well, we called in one of her animal friends that suggested to her, how about helping out when your mom is changing your baby brother? And just that way you'll be with her too. And she thought that was a fine idea. And when she had a solution to this problem, then the gate opened and she was able to send love in.
Ah, interesting. There's so much wisdom inside children if we just help them access it, isn't there?
Yes.
You advocate music, drawing, writing, and that there are ways that parents can help their children develop these techniques and use them. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I find that these areas are so healing and such a wonderful adjunct. You know, way back when I was in my own university training, I did study psychology, but I also studied art, and I found it very healing. And there's a whole field of art therapy, and there are so many art therapy type techniques that you could do with your kids. First of all, art is healing. Just by doing it, it's very cathartic because you're releasing. You're releasing what's inside you, and so it's not getting stuck inside. And so I'll work with the kids with their imageries or their imaginings or their dreams and have them put that on paper. And I have such a good time with them, and they do too, because I have like every marker in the world. I have these shiny ones. I have these ones that change color. And so they just have a great time, and they might first get into just playing with the markers because some kids are really hesitant about drawing. They don't think they're good enough. But then they just have such a good time that they allow themselves to let out their feelings on paper. And just putting it on paper is healing. And then you could work with the drawing. For example, you might find things that you wouldn't know ordinarily. I had a boy drawing water with a shark in it, and he was in the water, and it looked like something terrible was going to happen. So I just kind of asked, hey, could anything help that boy? And the reason I ask is because then I could find out what his resources are. And so he said, oh, yeah, his parents could throw in a, you know, life preserver. So then he imagined that happening. And then I might not have known that without seeing his art. Also, I'll use art as a kind of a before and after, kind of like how things are now and how would you like them to be? And they have that image in their mind, they put it on paper, and they can even hang up that future, that positive possible future, you know, in their house, in their bedroom, so it reminds them where they'd like to go. Or I'll use art by having them imagine where on their path they're going and where they started, where they'd like to go, and where exactly are they now. Like for bedwetting, I was working with a boy, and he could tell me exactly where he was, whether he was at the beginning or the middle, or he was getting toward the end, where he was going to be completely dry. So it's really lovely. And then music, I find, we know music, again, very healing. Just listening is healing. There's all kinds of beautiful music. Mozart has been studied a lot because of the beats per minute. And anything that's soft and brings up loving feelings, not particularly the rap music, which there's studies that show it causes more problems, but soothing music in the background. And I'll usually play music when I'm working with the kids on a longer imagery. I use it in the background in the CDs I create. And just having it in the background at home can be very soothing.
You have quite a collection of therapeutic relaxation CDs. You've got Discovering Your Special Place, Creating a Magical Garden and Healing Pond, Climbing a Mountain of Success, etc. How young can children be to listen to these?
You know, I originally wrote 5 to 105, but kids as young as 4 and sometimes even a bit younger. I have my 3-year-old cousin listening to it, and her little brother, who's like 4 months old, was having trouble sleeping, and they're sleeping in the same room, and like the dad says, oh, what should we do? And she goes, oh, Auntie Charlotte. Auntie Charlotte. So the 3-year-olds could listen to the short ones. I have one that is based on the 9 tools, and they're very short imageries, like 3 or 4 minutes for each tool. So if they're younger, that might be a little easier to listen to. Or just putting them on before they go to sleep, and they'll get some of the language and they'll miss some, but it's in a kind of a soothing, hypnotic voice. So it'll help them relax no matter what.
You have another technique that you use, which I find quite intriguing, which is the right and left brain dialogue. Tell us about that.
Yes, because I realized we were talking about art, music, and writing, and we hadn't gotten to the writing yet. And using your dominant and non-dominant hand, you could have a conversation. It's kind of like having a conversation with your more intuitive brain, which we typically think of as the right brain, and your more logical brain. And what else, and this is based on the work of Lucia Cappuccioni, who's written several books on the power of your other hand. And what I typically do with the kids is have them pick two different colored markers and then hold one in each hand. And I do this with the older kids when their writing is pretty good, say fourth grade and up. And the idea is you pose a question with one hand, like one boy wrote, "Why is there so much stress in my life?" And then you answer it in the other color with your non-dominant hand, because you're accessing that intuitive side. And he wrote with his non-dominant hand, "It's not so much stress. You put it on yourself." And then he asked, "Well, what can I do to get rid of stress?" with his dominant hand. And his non-dominant hand said, "Practice your imagery," which is basically, you know, practicing his meditation and all the things, all the tools he had been learning. So it's a great way to talk to your any part of yourself, your anger, your happy part, your wise part, the older, wiser you who has already gotten past a problem. I do that a lot with kids. You know, I'm working with an 11-year-old on an issue, and we just contacted the girl who's already gotten through her problem. And all her wisdom came through that way. So the writing is another kind of technique that accesses your intuition, which is the whole point of all this, helping the kids develop their intuition. They trust their intuition. There's so much wisdom inside. All they need is that little bit of a push sometimes.
And again, all of this is applicable to adults too. I mean, I'm just thinking of all the things I can do, writing with my right and left hand, and the questions that I can get answers for. It's like,
Yes. The parents could talk to their wounded child, their inner kid, you know, and try to make some peace with things that maybe didn't happen. Or even they could imagine talking to a parent who's already passed on and finish some business with them. Yeah. And just even if you don't do the non-dominant writing, just writing can be cathartic. Just sort of writing just keep writing. Don't think about it. Just get it out. Because some people prefer to draw. Some people prefer to write. I had one therapist doing a poem with her non-dominant hand after we did a guided imagery together. And beautiful things come out.
Mm. Oh, I mean, it is so effective, and we don't think about it enough. I know a girl who's probably approaching her 40s now. For most of her adult life, she's had severe depression, she's had agoraphobia, times when she can't work because she can't go out of the house, you know, really stressful, anxiety, and finally she got a counselor who said, you know, start painting.
Yes.
And this girl, it's like another being. Plus, she's discovered she's an incredible artist.
Isn't that wonderful?
Isn't it? And, you know, all her friends are saying, "My God, it's like a different person."
I love hearing this.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And it's all so simple, and we just don't think about it.
I'll have the kids create a feelings journal. So I'll have them get like one of those big black books with white pages inside, so they could write or draw. And the idea is they take time, maybe it's not every day, but maybe it's a few times a week, or maybe it's when a big feeling comes up, that they could just draw, they could do their non-dominant writing, they could just write anything down they want and draw anything they want down. And over time, they could really see their growth. And that way they're doing the work on their own, because my job is really to help the kids develop their tools and send them on their way. Same thing with parents.
You've got a great one that I'm going to steal. Your digging for treasure tool. My grandson loves treasure, and we go on treasure hunts a lot. And that particular one that you advocate is just so perfect for him.
And you're making a really good point. You want to use what your child loves, what they're passionate about, and go with that. So the idea of digging for treasure is the idea of going, in my mind, under the unconscious, because sometimes the answers aren't above ground. They're not above board. Maybe your animal friend doesn't have a gift for you. So then we'll dig for it, and we'll find this big treasure box that's going to have the answers for you in it. And then depending on how far down they have to dig, you know how far down in their unconscious you have to reach. So if it's just under the surface, or if it's like 100 feet down, or if it's 5 feet down, you just get a sense of that. It's a nice way to help the child access this information, which they might not get. And they always have someone there to help them dig it up, an animal friend. They have the tools they need. So it's all workable. And then sometimes when you open that treasure box, this is where maybe a little bit of resistance or kids' defenses come in. Maybe they don't see anything. Well, then you use your own creativity, and maybe you have like, oh, it needs their special flashlight that makes everything visible again. Or there's some paper with writing on it, but the writing can't be understood. Oh, it must be invisible ink. Let's put this on and see what it says.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's about using our imagination to keep going and be creative until we reach the solution.
Exactly. And I hopefully, as people read, they'll be inspired. Their own imaginations will perk up.
Yeah. You have a list of the top 10 things that kids most want and need from parents. Can you share that with us?
Oh,
that's lovely.
Because I didn't really make this up. It's from what kids have told me over the years. So I just went, wow, these kids really know what they need. And one, the first thing on their list is patience. We always need more patience. Because, you know, as parents, we want our kids to learn things quickly, do things quickly. We tell them something, they should do it. And, gosh, they have their own time. And they're just in their own world. So to be patient, that's really important. That the kids know you're patient with them. And to understand. They want understanding from their parents. Often we want to fix things for our kids. So instead of telling them what to do because we know how to fix the problem, just understanding what they're going through can be very healing. And just using their words or your own words and kind of reflective listening, so you tell them that you know how they're feeling and you appreciate it. So they really do want you to understand. And that goes along with listening, because often we don't let people finish their sentences, and even our kids sometimes. They want to be listened to. Again, you don't have to fix everything. They just want to be listened to. And sometimes, like before they go to sleep at night is a good time, their defenses are down, they want to talk. And sometimes we don't have that much time. We don't have an hour to listen to them. But we might say, I really want to listen to you. Let's take 10 minutes, and you just tell me everything that's on your mind. And if we run out of time, we'll talk again tomorrow. I'll listen again tomorrow. So you could set limits, but you also are there for your child, depending on what you're able to do. And, gosh, they really want their parents to use soft voices. I mean, the number one fear, say, is being hit. But if their parents don't hit, then they're afraid of being yelled at. And it's so easy for kids to push our buttons because that's what they do. They're wired to do that. But when we yell back, it's like they can't hear the important message that parents are trying to say. They just hear the yelling. They don't hear the words. So if you want them to hear your words, it's very helpful to talk in a neutral or a soft voice. And if you need a timeout, you need a break, go wash your face, go to the bathroom, come back when you are more centered so that your words can be effective because they are so important. And you know what kids need? And this is pretty obvious. They need structure. Even though they try to break down the structures and push up against the structure, they really feel safer when there's some structure in their life.
Tell us what you mean by structure. Are you talking about boundaries, rules, this is what's acceptable, this isn't?
Yes, all of that. Yes, and consistency goes along with that. In other words, if you say one thing one day, like there's no TV during the week, or you could watch TV, this is one, you could watch TV after you do your homework, and then they do their homework, and then you say, no, there's no TV during the week. I mean, that's very confusing to a child. So you want to think about what is important to you, set up your boundaries, make your structure, and sort of stick to it. And, of course, knowing it's important to be flexible sometimes, but not so flexible that there's no consistency. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. I remember a friend telling me recently how he'd had a chat with his grandson, and his grandson said it's not fair because Daddy said one thing and then he did something else.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Daddy had a good reason, but
right.
still the child was so hurt.
Right. So if that's going to happen, you need to take the time to explain it to your child.
Yeah.
But depending on their developmental level, they understand flexibility, and sometimes they don't. Younger levels, they're more rigid in what's right and wrong. Not to say you don't do what you need to do differently, but at least understand how your child is feeling and explain it to him. And then they need a lot of love. And love, I mean, we take it for granted. Of course I love my child. But sometimes kids interpret when you're angry at them as lack of love.
Yeah.
So we need to really show them and tell them that we love them very often. One dad, I was doing a workshop, and he imagined in his kind of imagination, this imagery, talking to his own dad who had died. And in this reverie, he imagined his dad telling him he loved him. He had never said that while he was alive. And he realized how much it meant to him and how he needed to tell his kids every day that he loved them.
Yeah. I remember when I was writing books on relationships, men-women relationships, you know, there's a thing that we don't do. We kind of assume, we make all these assumptions that if we say, I love you, or do you love me, or whatever, that, you know, there's a kind of, we know what the other one is thinking and feeling, but what we don't do is we don't ask our partners or our children, what is it that has to happen for you to feel loved?
Yeah.
How do you know when you are being loved?
Right, right.
And I think, you know, this is something we should do with our children, because they may have a different yardstick or something,
yeah,
that really makes
absolutely
them loved.
And this, I'm thinking of one child who is afraid to talk to her dad because she's afraid if she tells him what she's really thinking, he'll get mad at her. So another question to ask is, how can I make it safe for you to tell me anything? What do you need from me?
Yes, that's a really big one, isn't it? Because safety is such a big,
yes, because we want our children to be able to turn to us when they're in trouble or when they're upset.
Yes.
And without fear of us just getting angry at them.
Yes.
And often the anger is from our worry about them.
Yes. Of course.
So, and we want our kids to be able to go out there, and that's another top 10 is freedom connected to responsibility. So, for example, we want our kids to go out and drive the car and have a good time, but they need to come back at a certain time. They need to report in so we know they're safe. So we tie their freedom to responsibility. At a younger child, you know, at younger ages, maybe they go next door to play, but they have to come back, you know, for dinner time. So you allow them the freedom to go out, but then they have to have the responsibility of coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it doesn't just take a village to raise a kid. It takes a lifetime. But it really helps to have a lot of family support and extended family, friends that feel like family. And that's another top 10, because it really makes a difference. Maybe you can't help your child with science homework, but, you know, uncle can. Or maybe a teenager can't speak to you, but she could speak to a good friend, a good adult friend. So you want a lot of support as much as you can, and to use your community to help support you. And, of course, the last is role models. You know, kids learn from what you do rather than what you say. Like that little boy saying, Daddy said one thing and did another. That's so important. The best thing I tell parents that they could do for their kids is take care of themselves. Be the person they want their child to be.
Mm. What about the child, and I, you know, this is something that doesn't really occur to many of us, but the child who has really low self-esteem and hates themselves, you know, I don't know any parents who would even begin to imagine that a child of 5 might hate themselves, but it can happen.
It can happen because they have very big emotions at that age, and little things could mean a big deal to them, like if they're snuffed by their friends at kindergarten, they might feel they're worthless, and, you know, just kids young, that young have told their parents, I just want to die. which is shocking, but it does happen. And maybe they parents, you know, we feel they're exaggerating, but they're having a very big feeling like that. And we want to pay attention to it. One little girl had a special wizard come because her friends at school were not having lunch with her, or she thought they were snubbing her at lunch. And so her wizard gave her a couple of crystals. One was a heart crystal to love herself no matter what. One was a star, and to love her friends even if they weren't nice to her. And one was a star crystal to help her feel like a star no matter what. So through her own imagination, she was able to make herself feel a little bit better. And she felt she had some support in the form of this lovely little young wizard.
What about,
I mean, the whole self-esteem, that's ours in itself.
Yes.
But that's
yes,
just a little tidbit of,
yeah.
You, kids can find the resources within themselves to feel better.
And we're not very good at recognizing, you know, this whole lack of self-esteem issue. Or we chivvy them along, don't be silly, you know. Of course people like you, or, you know, we don't take it seriously enough.
Right. So mostly every time I'm working with a parent, I always remind them to stay with the child's feeling for a while before they negate it, or, you know, tell them not to worry or tell them how to fix it. Because your child really wants to know that you understand. And also you want to open them up to speak more, to share more. So as you're going, wow, that sounds like, you know, you're feeling really bad that these girls didn't eat with you at lunch. And that just opens up, yeah, and then this happened and that happened. And so you want to be there for her to talk or him to talk more and more and more and get these things out.
Mm.
And then you could go back and say, gosh, I'm wondering, you know, I'm wondering if there's one person that you feel good about that you might sit next to. But not to go there until you've given your child enough space and time to really share what's in her heart.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't even talk about, you know, really helping your kids develop their own heart wisdom and connect with that, those intuitive gut feelings or that wisdom that's in the heart. And that really helps, too, whenever a situation comes up.
How do we do that?
Just have them do their breathing and then maybe put their hand over their heart or the center of their chest and just sort of start saying, what's my heart want to tell me today? What's my message? And over time, the heart speaks back because our mind is so active and that's where we go all the time. The same thing with our gut feelings. And there's research to show there are cells in our heart and in our gut that are almost like brain cells and they have their own wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to connect the mind, the heart, and the gut feelings. We don't want to negate the mind, but we want to bring in the intuition and the heart wisdom.
Yeah, I mean, this is their inner compass, isn't it? If they can learn to develop that at a young age, then they've always got that to go to when they're
exactly.
older.
Exactly. I mean, if you can imagine something, then you could take the steps to get there.
Yes. Yeah. It's such a shame that we don't honor the imagination enough. But, of course, nothing would exist without imagination.
Of course, Einstein imagined, you know, light traveling on
yeah.
a, you know, the speed traveling on a beam of light. That's where everything comes from. I think we take it for granted. We don't think about breaking it down that way.
Mm. And we don't give ourselves the time. Because we're all too busy. How much quiet time do we actually have when we stop and we say, I'm going to do nothing and just let my thoughts, my imagination roam where it will?
We rarely do that. That's why I say, okay, take a minute. Start with a minute. Everyone can find a minute. Or before you sit down to homework, just do your breathing and then imagine cleaning out your brain and having it nice and spiffed up so that it could do your homework efficiently.
Yeah.
You want to look for those times during the day where you can sneak in a minute or 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been, you know, having some thoughts about something recently and thinking, oh, anxiety. And you've just reminded me of the, you know, the value of just sitting down and using my imagination on it.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
Right. Maybe your dragon will help.
Maybe my dragon will. Yeah, absolutely.
And if he won't or she won't, then call in someone else or some other creature.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the idea. You call it. You have a problem. You call in. Who's going to help?
Yeah.
Who's coming in to help?
Mm.
And just see what pops up.
Mm.
Have a conversation.
Charlotte, you have a wonderful website that is full of resources for parents. Tell us about it. Tell us what they can find there. I know you've got a great newsletter and you've got some great products too. So if you could briefly tell us about those. So that
Sure. It's www.imageryforkids.com, and that's F-O-R. You can also Google my name with a Z and find me that way. But imageryforkids.com. There's an expanded version of the top 10. I have lots of yummy information in it. You just sign up for that. You get on my newsletter, and you'll get the top 10 immediately. And then I have lots of articles, free articles that I've written. There's a connection to the Psychology Today blog that I blog for, and articles there. And also, if they want to, when they buy my book, if it's not going directly in the store, even if they do, they just take their receipt number and you click on my homepage. If you click on the picture of the book, it'll take you to a way to receive like 80-plus free downloadable gifts. And so you just buy it at Amazon or whatever or your bookstore, and you put in your receipt number, and then you have access to all these gifts. Plus, they get access to like very deep discounts on all these CDs and downloadables for my CDs that they wouldn't get any other way. Or they could just go to my shop page, and there's samples of all the CDs. And Climbing a Mountain of Success, gosh, one principal bought that for every teacher in his school to start the school year off right. And lots of information there, and links to other interesting sites.
Well, your book, The Power of Your Child's Imagination, How to Transform Stress and Anxiety into Joy and Success, is actually on my list to give to a lot of the young mums I know for Christmas.
Wonderful.
It's invaluable. Charlotte Resnick, thank you so much for joining us today. I can't wait till the next book comes out.
Oh.
What's it going to be?
Thank you. This is 20 years in the making. So.
Okay, well, I hope we don't have to wait another
year
for the next one.
Thank you so much, Sandy, for your
kindness. Charlotte, for being with us today. It's been a pleasure again.
You're great.
Bye-bye. Well, sadly, that brings us to the end of this week's show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I hope you will join me next week for another edition of the Inspired Parenting Show.
The IP Radio Show is brought to you by Cosmic Kids, Inspired Parenting Magazine, and Inspired Parenting Playdates with Purpose Playgroups, now forming around the world. The Inspired Parenting Show is broadcast on World Puja every Sunday at 11 o'clock a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Shows are archived online for 1 year and are available for you to listen to online 24/7 or can be downloaded free in MP3 audio format for listening at your leisure. For more information about forthcoming guests, visit www.worldpuja.org, www.inspiredparenting.com, and www.childrenofthenewearth.com. We really welcome your feedback as well as any inquiries about sponsorship opportunities. You can email Sandy direct at sandy@worldpuja.org. That's S-A-N-D-I-E @worldpuja.org.